Carnival Hawaiian Rainforest Spas on Kauai. Help us reach our goal by making a donation today by calling 826-7774 or online at kkcr.org. KKCR, Keikani o Kauai'ine, the sound of Kauai.
Oh, thank you so much for supporting Kauai Community Radio. We're going to send you over to KCC. There's a live remote going to happen, so stick around. Enjoy the show. Live from Kauai Community College.
Okay. So are you going to signal him when I'm on?
Welcome to the show. Thanks a lot. Here we are.
Okay. So thank you for listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea, K284AL, Holly Eva. This is Felicia. And this is Felicia with Kauai Soapbox. And today we really are very much live here at Kauai Community College. So we are going to have a number of guests in here. And if you would like to come down, we are in the high-tech building. Sorry. So we were hearing the echo. We were getting rid of the echo. So today, after this speaking time, we will be with, we're going to have a film, Neil Kinsey's Hands-On Agronomy, that Regenerations Botanical Garden is putting on. And so I really recommend you coming down here, 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. if you're interested in this film describing effective soil fertility management based on the Albrecht system. So that focus is on balancing nutrients and feeding the soil so soil can feed the plants. Now, I'm really excited to be doing this talk, and we've got six really amazing people in the room that are sitting at a panel, but we have many more that have a lot of knowledge that will be asking questions. And I think that helping to improve our soils is a very big deal for us in the next 10 years, and I think that we can really achieve it. Many people have become nervous about the land that they're actually living on. And bioremediation is a way to clean it up. So we're going to be trying to look at how we can do it both for your own backyard, your own home site, but even more importantly is how do we do it across the island? How do we make it work, you know, anywhere and everywhere? And we need not be afraid. There are plenty of ways to be resolving this. So we are going to be listening to a number of different guests here, and I'm going to start off with Paul Massey, who is from Regenerations. And Paul, do you want to give the listener a little bit of an idea of what your experience is in soil remediation, and you know where we're going to be bringing this? We're going to be hearing from a number of people. We're strong and able to do this.
Awesome. Thank you, Felicia. My enthusiasm for soil remediation, but thinking about soil remediation and what it really means, and that it's not just limited to removing toxins from the soil, but it's making sure that that soil is healthy and fertile for growing crops, for growing even just appropriate plant cover to keep that soil in place, that sustains the wildlife of this island. And we've been working on developing a novel ecosystem up in Kalihiwai, the Kalihiwai Food Forest, and that's given us an opportunity to learn about a lot of different dynamics of trying to manage an ecosystem. And the soil, the conditions of the soil there are very challenging. And that's led us to want to go deeper into our understanding of previous land use there, as an example, and how we can remediate or turn the clock back and return to a state of ecosystem health, the soil being one of the key components of ecosystem health. So really our focus is working with the community on doing those projects and being able to harvest the shared intelligence of a larger group of people.
Okay, and John Parziali, you've done some amazing things, and why don't you share a little bit about your experience?
Aloha. Purple mic? Is that purple mic? Or this should be live? Okay. All right. John Parziali, I'm a farmer from Molawa'a. I've also directed and operated a soil laboratory, a biological soil laboratory in Kilauea, looking at the living component of soil. Again, soil is a medium that is composed of a universe of diverse life, and in the best scenario, supporting life above the ground. At that time, I was actually working with microbiologist extraordinaire Elaine Ingham, who runs the Soil Food Web company, which does amazing work here and abroad. Just again looking at the biological component of soil. So we're talking about bioremediation. We're looking at both the plant and fungal associates that can help us bring the life back to the soil, and I believe that that's really it's kind of the foundation of the Aloha Aina concept. It's starting with the soil, and if we see a film this afternoon with Neil Kinsey, I'm sure he's going to get into William Albrecht's work, which he is again one of the pioneers of the connection between a living, healthy soil, then to healthy plants, and then to healthy people. So he was one of the first people that really made that continuity, and his work is pretty amazing. I'm sure we're going to be all really inspired by that too.
And Sun Hadley, maybe when you start explaining this, many people don't understand fully what soil means, and so soil is more than just the minerals and the dirt that's in there. So you can explain how we create a really healthy soil that's the foundation of life, and you know what you've done that's helped you to have that experience.
This one works good. Yeah, hi. 25 years, biointensive, which you can check it out on the computer. It's hand cultivation, and there's no fuel used for that, so it's genuine sustainability. And we got a chance to look at, soil contamination here. So if there's a concern, we can assure you that in a short amount of time, using good organic methods, that we can turn that around and can be checked out in a lab, so there are contaminations in the islands that those really have to be identified in order to move into sustainable food production, which we've been doing, as I said, for 25 years. So not only can it be done, it's been done. And we're always open to sharing through with the system, and anybody that knows us knows that we share whatever we know. So no worries. We have a class coming up in May, and you can check that out. So bioremediation is a way of life for us, and any other questions, I'll be glad to answer those.
So Dave Giroux, from Kauai Environmental, you have your business is basically looking at contaminants and checking out how is the soil, where it's strong, where it's has challenges. Can you help us to know where in the Pacific that you've done this work, and then whatever way you've seen any kind of trending on Kauai? You've been here for what, like 30 years?
15 years.
15 years. Okay. So right. what is your experience, and what has it shown you?
Well, my background is in chemistry and environmental science. I've been doing environmental consulting now for over 30 years. And it's more of a traditional approach, scientific approach, to evaluating contamination. And so it's a lot different than, you know, a lot of the farmers and agricultural folks here. So the piece of the puzzle that I bring to the table, I think, is going to be a lot different based on the science of things. And so, you know, my strength or my background is in analytical chemistry and measuring contaminants in the environment. And so my experience with soil remediation has been in removing high concentrations of contaminants from the environment. And typically, you know, with a hazardous waste site, you know, you've got very high concentrations of petroleum, metals, pesticides, whatever. And the more traditional way of dealing with it is to dig it up, package it off, send it to a landfill or to an incinerator. And, you know, you can do that with high concentration, small areas, but you can't do that with farms, with tens of thousands of acres of agricultural lands. So there's a new effort on the part of the EPA to develop new technologies. And so they're now looking at a wide variety of different technologies from, you know, bioremediation and phytoremediation, some of which, you know, we have some experience with here. You know, I have been involved in a lot of different things, but mostly packaging them up, you know, maybe some air sparging to remove volatile chemicals from the soils, or bioremediation where you inoculate wells or soils with bacteria that will eat the contaminants, and various things like that. So not so much in terms of the phytoremediation that we're, you know, a lot of people here have experience with. But so that's kind of where I'm coming from.
So thank you. So what we're hearing is that, you know, the traditional way has been to dig up the bad soil elements and then contain it and move it away. And so basically bioremediation is a much stronger element of cleaning up the soil without having to get rid of it. So we're going to be hearing now from Ray Maki, and I'm hoping that you'll be especially giving a little bit of knowledge about the microorganisms and some of the plants for uptake and how we both are breaking down complex chemicals as well as pulling out the heavy metals that can't be broken down.
Happy Earth Day, everyone. My name is Ray Maki. My company is Permaculture Kauai, and I'm a 22-year resident here on Kauai, working organic farmer. And so I guess a short answer to what you're saying, Felicia, is soil is a blend of silt, clay, mineral particles, water, air, elemental cations, microorganisms, fungal colonies, and higher order organisms like worms and other smaller insects. And the balance that nature naturally promotes in soil, not dirt, is where the symbiotic relationship of all those elements work together. So that's interrupted in episodes where contamination of one particular element is in domination over another and displaces the life function for the healthy living part of the soil to exist. So the technology of bioremediation is already fairly advanced. Dave alluded to a few of the more obvious heavy dose concentrated areas that have been identified, and in those situations the timely and even effective way of rectifying that would be soil removal. So that is kind of the standard process in areas where there's high doses or heavy concentrations of particularly hydrocarbon materials, and he can go on about that. But really, the theme of what we're talking about today is bioremediation, and that will, you know, we'll go deeper into that. But as you alluded to, the microorganism contribution to soil is only recently being recognized and systematized, and Elaine Ingham did a lot of that work in the early 90s and, you know, continues to do it, and articulated that organic farming is not just, you know, moving, transitioning from chemical application to recognition and placement of cations in the soil and waiting for plants to grow. Really what was missing there was cultivating the microorganisms that pre-digest those elemental forms into organic molecules that can be taken by plants and promote healthy ecological processes in the soil. So we'll go into a number of those technologies and strategies, but some of them have already been applied here on Kauai, particularly in removing chlorinated hydrocarbons from the soil, the DDT class of chemicals. And so we'll be looking at, you know, setting up studies here on the island and in soils that are identified with DDT chemicals, arsenic, other heavy metals, and using plants and applications of fungal and biological microorganisms in situ to rectify and try to change some of that chemical analysis in the soil.
Thank you, Ray. And so our one off-island guest, we're really glad to have Hector Valenzuela here from the University of Hawaii. And Hector, we're excited to have you here, and we're excited about some of the legislation that's just passed, too. You know, it gives us different areas and room to be experimenting with different things for helping clean elements up. And so if you can start us off by letting us know, what is your focus at the College of Tropical Agriculture and Human Resources, what your projects have been on, and then we will be pretty soon taking questions from our audience. But I'm really excited for the listener, for people in Kauai, to know that we have your interest and your good intention for Kauai, and that maybe there's some projects that we can start putting underway here. I'm looking forward to really having workshops, all kinds of things. So, Hector, Dr. Hector, tell us about yourself.
Thanks, Felicia. So my angle over the past about 22 years in Hawaii has been more to build up the soil rather than cleaning it. And my perspective working with commercial farmers, was how to build up the soil so that they wouldn't have to rely on as many external inputs. And I have taken more of a package approach, trying to put the different pieces of the puzzle together. And one of them, the first of them, is to select proper varieties that are adapted to where they're growing, so that you don't have to be fighting all the time to get those crops growing. Another angle was to build the organic matter of the soil through adding organic amendments with compost applications and so on. And my angle was how to develop this technology so that we can start sharing this information throughout the islands instead of just we doing it. Another angle was building up the soil, the microbial activity of the soil, and the one way of doing it was through cover crops, diversity of cover crops to build the microbial activity. Another angle would be diversifying the production operation. Rather than having a single field with one crop, diversifying that system so that it becomes stronger. And in putting that package together, you would be less reliant on having to have to purchase more fertilizers or chemicals or pesticides to make it happen. One of the more important things that have come up is that it's agriculture, and at the university, we normally do research with factorials and so on, but we forget that it's a human-based practice, and it's almost the most important part of the package. So as you're putting the different pieces of the puzzle together, you have to figure out how is it going to work for the person, for the family, or the ohana. So this is something that as we proceed with bioremediation, how can we develop the systems to make it work for the people that are going to do it.
Thank you. So we're going to do one more round of questions, and then I'm going to start taking them from the audience. Paul from Regenerations, how can community members be empowered to clean the soil in their immediate areas? And let's even for the moment presume that not everybody is intending to be a farmer. They're just wanting to clean up around their area. I've spoken to many people who are nervous about what's in their land. So Paul from Regenerations.
Thank you. Yeah, so the soils are very complex systems, and we have a lot of different kinds of soils here on Kauai and in the Hawaiian Islands, and then there are all the various land management uses that have happened here. A lot of times people are living on what is now residential land but used to be agricultural land, and so maybe these areas, which we can't imagine used to be under heavy intensive industrial crop production, were, and there were uses of that land that could have contaminated the soil, especially in areas where pesticides would have been mixed and these chemicals would have been much more likely to spill or be concentrated in the soils. And it's, I think, going to be an effort of educating all of ourselves about what are the potential toxins. That's why it's great to have folks like Dave Giroux who know these chemicals and know the incidences of them on Kauai. Once we become educated about what the potential risks are, we can start looking at the strategies that best work for those particular toxins. And certainly soil testing is going to need to happen. That can be very expensive, especially if you don't know what you're looking for. So being able to hooey up together as a community to become more educated, to be able to get the testing that we need to be doing, and then that we have access to the solutions, whether they be biological life like compost teas or spawn for starting mushrooms or other things that can help us to clean the soil, or if there are other, if it is the reintroduction of the right kind of minerals or other kinds of things that make the soil healthy so that the biology will thrive. Cultivation of the land may be necessary to introduce oxygen into the environment. There's just very many practices that we need to figure out the simplest way to do them. So if we discover, okay, well, we need to till the soil in my backyard, then who's got the tiller, and how, you know, do I have to go buy a tiller, or maybe is there a community tiller that can come to my house to do this work? So in all ways that we can, Regenerations is looking into how can we take the opportunity that we have having a site in Kalihiwai for building a community resource center for agriculture, but also for the backyard grower. How can we use that as a demonstration site? We have very depleted soils that were used for industrial agriculture right there, and so we do have potential toxicities in the soil. We certainly have nutrient deficiencies. We're fortunate enough to have Sun Hadley as one of our next-door neighbors who has great experience in remineralizing the soil, and we just need to be looking at the latest techniques and the lowest-cost solutions available, and then practicing them as a community so that we can discover those things that really work for us.
And some of these things tend to be actually kind of simple, like not throwing your green waste away, but grinding it up and leaving them on your property, you know, just keeping your green waste there. Frankly, having animals in your property, because manure mixing with the green waste really makes a big difference. It starts to get these things going together. John Parziali, I want you to try and speak a little bit to large pieces of land. Like Paul and myself, we have a lot of experience with small pieces. When you have big areas, like if we're using cattle or animals, and how we can be dealing with that and using large green waste areas, perhaps, you know, with mycelium, I think is very important, which is the mushroom, the plant that... It's actually not, it's a fungi that puts mushrooms out to spawn. How do we take bigger areas, like where I'm even visualizing is some of that area around Kekaha Sugar Mill, someplace, how do we get big little pieces like that starting to come under control.
Okay, a couple of questions there, I guess. So maybe first just a clarification of some of the terminology that we're using maybe would be in order. So we have a soil remediation, which is a general basically cleaning up toxins from the soil. So there's very heavy-duty sort of industrial processes that can do that work that Dave, I think, spoke to. So, again, injecting oxygen, injecting, trying to take out volatile chemicals. So that's sort of the industrial side of things. Then we have bioremediation, which is using plants and other biology to do some of the same things. So under the bioremediation, we have sort of two types of that. We have phytoremediation, which is using plants to grow in contaminated soil, and there's very specific plants that can uptake very specific contaminants, and then you either dispose of the plants or you, I think in some cases with some plants that actually bring up heavy metals, you can actually harvest, I believe, the metals from the plants. So in like a recycling situation. So that would be like a phytoremediation. Then on the other type of bioremediation, at least generally, I'm speaking generally, would be mycoremediation, which is the use of fungal organisms to clean up the soil. So there's a couple of different ways when you're speaking of mycelium, there's a couple of different ways that you can use fungus to clean up the soil. In the same way that plants uptake toxins, there are some species of mushrooms that do that as well, bring up certain heavy metals, certain contaminants, and then you're looking at disposing of a mushroom, like a fruiting body of a mushroom. Now mycelium, the best analogy of that is like the root structure of a mushroom. So in addition to again, bringing toxins up into the fruiting body of the mushroom to be disposed of, the mycelial structure actually it lets go like enzymes in the soil. And what these do in nature typically is they break down organic matter. So these are your natural decomposers of the forest. However, a lot of our toxins, a lot of the problems that we have in terms of contamination are also, hydrocarbons. So we're talking about persistent, organic pesticides, petrochemicals, even like some of the nastiest stuff out there, like nerve gases and sarin and things like that. Mushrooms or mycelium specifically, they're not just bringing the toxin out of the soil, they're actually breaking it down. So they've done some research with oyster mushrooms where they actually, in other words, the contaminant is broken down into the soil. So you're growing something on contaminated soil, and the root structure is breaking it down. But the actual fruiting body of the mushroom, not that you'd necessarily choose to eat it, but it is actually edible. So it's not uptaking the chemical. It's actually breaking it down in the environment, which is a huge thing. And that work has been pioneered by many people, among them Paul Stamets, who's been here to Kauai before about 10 years ago and gave a great talk in Hanalei. And maybe it would be nice to maybe see if he could come back sometime.
Yeah, I have that goal is to get a lot of heroes over here. Glad that Hector is one of them sitting here, that we are going to try and really actually make a real difference. You are listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K284AL Haleiwa. This is Felicia with Kauai Soapbox, and we are doing a live remote at Kauai Community College. And we're speaking with a number of panelists here who are strong on improving our soil and making it healthy again. So, Sun Hadley, can you help an individual visualize, like you're speaking to somebody who just moved on to a piece of property and they know that it used to be pineapple or it used to be sugar or it is right downwind and downstream from the dump? What would you do to have a first round to help that land be healthier for them, and especially so that they're not worried about the dust from the land? What would your steps be to start fixing that problem?
check in with me before you buy it?
Let's pretend you inherited it and it's not a good piece of land. In terms of, and I want to say innocent until proven guilty, but let's look at a guilty piece of land. It's had some problems.
Basically doing a soil analysis. If you got black plastic, it's a bit uphill because of the contamination. And again, these are just, I think when we gave our power away as gardeners and farmers to commercial endeavors, and so whether it's sugar or pineapple or potatoes in Iowa, it doesn't matter. It was under the economic pressure to perform. And as Hector and others know, that we did our best at that time to produce enough food for a lot of people who are not farmers. So here, we're dealing with that. So we're all guilty. If you ate pineapple, you know, you're part of it. Nobody gets off the hook here. So basically, it's let's do a good soil test, because a lot of the soils were mined, basically. In other words, how much selenium does a sugar cane take out? How much vanadium? How much? These are all trace elements.
But how about for keeping down what might be toxic, right?
That's a long-term project. So with our experience on pineapple land, which is where I started, basically it was about a four-year process before there was no residues. And that's with like a wheelbarrow of compost every month in 100 square feet of bed.
Wow.
So think about that. But what we're looking at is most of it's gone at this time because of, and depending on the rainfall. Okay, Kaha, you got a problem. So Kalihivai, you don't have a problem because of the rainfall, see. So as we're going to remineralize the soil, so now we're creating that fungal environment. And the fungal environment, louder, I'm supposed to speak louder. Okay. So the fungal environment, if you take a good compost, quality compost pile, you're not going to have any residues coming out of that. So like John was talking about was phytoremediation, is to grow out, say, like once you identify your contaminant, and it's not just Paul Stamets, it's a whole lot of other people that have been doing this research. Harry McCormick, 40 years ago, was pointing out the contaminants and the plants that could pull them out. And those can be composted on site, so with no problem, and that compost gets put back in. So you're creating a fungal environment that is going to support organic farming, and now you're doing your cover cropping, so you're going to continue to build the food forest aspect. I guess these are huge pieces that can be implemented. I think that the stumbling block is going to be, who's going to pay for that? You're going to go out to Kekaha and you got 2,000 acres of content. Who's going to pay for that? That's all.
So okay.
We got to start small, Felicia, basically, and get you don't need a rototiller. What we do is, it's pretty simple, and we can grow a lot of food in 100 square feet.
Okay, so I'm going to try and create a challenge out of that, because I'm an instant gratification kind of girl.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not patient.
Mm-hmm.
I want to make it work. And so, like, when I'm looking at things like that, I think, okay, we take the green waste. We've got a lot of green waste on the island, and we layer it over all these areas that are dry, and it keeps at least the soil from blowing around. So if we cover it with green waste and we infuse it with mycelium and microbes, and it begins that process of breaking down, hopefully that is like being able to utilize space for the ground up green waste, and that we can work on that. Dave, can you tell us what are the typical contaminants that are around in the island? And then, like, what is, I know that there's, like, a background level of arsenic. Lead seems to be around. Is it coming from the volcano? What is the normal background? And then what is things from the past 100 years of different types of ag practices?
Well, I've done a fair amount of soil sampling around for a variety of different purposes. some of which people have a property. They want to know if it's contaminated. Can they do an organic farm on that property? And so we look at a lot of different things, and generally it's heavy metals and the pesticide scan. There's a laboratory I use, and this isn't a plug or anything for them, but they're really good, Pacific Agricultural Laboratories in Portland, Oregon. And they'll do 250 different pesticide and herbicide products all in a single sample for a very reasonable price. And so I use them quite a bit. And then look at the whole range of pesticides and then heavy metals. And it's difficult to interpret the results a lot of times. Anytime you see pesticides in there, obviously that was applied. That's not a natural chemical there. But the metals can be. Even though you find some pretty high concentrations, you may find that they're actually background levels. And I've got a report. It's on the HIOSH website, or not HIOSH, the Department of Health's website. And it's a Hawaiian Islands Soil Metal Background Evaluation Report. And they looked at about 25 different elements here and sampled all over the state to determine what they consider to be background levels. So if you look at something like arsenic, they took 137 samples around the state. The average was 12 parts per million, but the range is anywhere from 0.3 to 280. So, if you find 200 in your soils, you're not going to know, well, were they mixing pesticides right here? They used to use arsenic in the cane fields. They put them on the roads, along the ditches, along the railroad tracks to just keep the weeds down. And so it was spread all over the island, but there's quite a bit here naturally. Same with chromium. For example, chromium, 147 locations. I might be boring you with these numbers, but I'll get excited about them. And so their range is from 8 parts per million to 3,000. Okay, so just testing them doesn't really, it tells you what you're dealing with, but you're not going to know exactly where the source was for that matter. And then in terms of testing for pesticides, talk about the soils again. There was a big controversy 6 months or so ago. Somebody took a bunch of samples of the reef, sediments in the reef in Hanalei, and said, oh, my God, look, the arsenic and chromium levels out here are super high. It's killing the reef, and it's a big problem. Well, the health department looked at the results and said, these are typical of the soils here. They're high here because it hasn't had a chance to break down and distribute through the environment because the soils are so new. But then now talking to pesticides, generally a lot of the pesticide products break down fairly quickly in the environment, in the soils, from sun exposure. They get washed away with the water. The bugs eat them, that sort of thing. So generally, I've tested some soils from, probably what you consider to be the highest pesticide use. There were sugar cane for 100 years, and there were pineapple for 50 years. Hasn't been anything grown on there for 5 years, and the pesticide concentrations are pretty low. And the only thing you really detect are chlorinated pesticides. So a lot of the chlorinated ones are very persistent in the environment. They don't break down. Bacteria can't break the chlorine bond and break down that chemical. So things like DDT, heptachlor, chlordane, endrin, aldrin, lindane, all these, chlorinated pesticides remain in the soils for decades and probably hundreds of years. I predict 100 years from now we'll still be measuring DDT in the soils, even though it's been banned for the last 30, 40 years here now. And so, at least, having data and knowing what you're working with, you can come up with a strategy of removing it, but you may not know exactly where it came from, or by looking at a piece of property, that's bound to be contaminated because the variability in those results is so great.
Thank you, Dave. Really appreciate that. Ray Maki, do you want to speak to the microorganisms and the mycelium a little bit more? I'm still thinking about how do we take a pathway of what we know is contaminated dust And as quickly as possible, how do we start to break that down as quickly and cheaply as possible?
Well, I think that it's good that a couple of people mentioned the soil test, and Dave's mentioning of Pacific Ag Labs and the test that they do, I think is really important to just identify what we have. Chemicals are pervasive in our system, but they're not literally everywhere, and I think it's a good dose of reason to want to do that test before we launch into big remediation projects. At the same time, I agree with Paul's point. Improving the soil isn't just about removing toxins from the soil. It's about promoting healthy background cation balance and also healthy environment for the microorganisms that we're talking about.
Can you tell us what a cation is?
Cation is one of the positive charged elements that are essential for biological activities in the soil. So calcium and, other heavier elemental forms that are essential for agriculture. So, a soil test would recognize that that there is a deplete or negative levels in the soil that can easily be replenished through the application of powdered mineral fertilizer materials. So that would be, provide the background chemical environment for plants and microorganisms to live in the soil, and then through their life processes begin either improving the soil through accumulation of organic matters and acids and essential chemical constituents in the soil, and also as I said, provide the proper environment for those things to exist and begin to do the work that you're talking about. So your question was how do they work in order to bioremediate the soil?
Yes. Like it, because it goes in. What I've seen in my own little yard, seeing it went from soil that was so hard it was shiny, and didn't really. And I probably had about 3 inches of soil horizon, and just to see how black and rich it is right now without putting a lot of effort into it, So I just keep holding out that we're going to be able to do quite a bit with it when we look at what nature does. And when a field is let go for a while, pretty quickly it starts to remediate. Just on its own, it seems like it creates this living layer in the soil, makes a greater depth. And so,
I
think like
you
when
that,
you
that
infuse first. these living creatures in there, which is the mycelium and the microbes, that it accelerates that process.
That's one of the first effects that I've seen with the application of microorganisms to the soil, is that it increases the aerobic layer in the soil. So immediate increase in tilth in one season I've seen. So the fact that microbial processes were allowed to proliferate in the soil, air and moisture was allowed to penetrate deeper into the soil, just meant that more organic processes were happening deeper and deeper in the soil. So I think what Dave mentioned and what John mentioned was that the fungal colonies actually will uptake some of these constituents and transform them into less toxic forms. So I think that basically through the biological process of incorporation into their own tissues or through the exudates that they expire in the soil, that sets up other chemical processes that other microorganisms and other biological processes would begin to transform those elements.
Okay, thank you. I know in my own yard, and Dave did help me with mine, endosulfan 2 seemed to be the only persistent. Would we call that a dioxin? Is that a dioxin? No. The only persistent chemical that stayed. I did have lead and arsenic, and I know daikons and elements like that. Dr. Valenzuela, Hector, we just had the legislature passed hemp as something to be used as experimentation, and I had asked you if maybe you would be willing to help with that. Can you give us some idea of what, like, hemp does uptake? I know daikon radishes are another thing that does uptake. Is this an area that you have some strength in, and what does come up in those plants?
So I just wanted to clarify, following on the terminology, that we are dealing with two different things.
Okay.
One of them is remediation of soil that has been degraded from conventional farming practices, from excessive application of fertilizers, chemicals, from erosion, and so on. And you see this after 20, 30 years of conventional farming. The second aspect is if it has chemical contamination. So that's, you go for bioremediation. And normally, if something is out of balance in the soil, you lose the balance in the microbial activity. You normally have a normal microbial activity, and when there's an unbalance, a specific organ or microorganisms take advantage and they proliferate. And this is how you get diseases and problems in the soil. And the goal is how to bring that microbial complex back into sync so that the soil is healthy again. The soil, and you mentioned this, Felicia, tends to regenerate itself. If you leave it alone over the years, it comes back. And indigenous populations used to follow shifting cultivation. And in the old days in the U.S., we used to follow 6 to 8, 6 year rotations. We used to plant corn, and we wouldn't come back to the field 6 years later. In terms of bringing back that microbial activity in the soil, you have to understand what's out there and what's out there. And in Hawaii, we don't have that understanding. We don't have an understanding of the profile. Sometimes we base our understanding of what's going on in temperate soils, and I think we have to redefine that for Hawaii. With bioremediation, you can take a generalist approach, how to clean the soil in general, or you can take a surgical approach if there's a specific chemical that you're worried about. If you do an analysis and you found a heptachlor or atrazine or another chemical, if it's a surgical approach, then you would select a specific crop that is known to take that specific chemical. So, for example, rice is known to uptake arsenic. So if there's high levels of arsenic in your field, you may select rice. If it's heptachlor, you would select that squash. With hemp, I don't know if it has an advantage to specific chemicals or if it's more of a generalist approach. I just understand that it's just because it's such a crop that grows so well, almost like a weed, and so vigorously, that it has a real good potential to revitalize and regenerate the fertility of the soil.
Yeah, I think it's pretty exciting to contemplate that, because if we can grow it, even in like these buffer zones between other crops, different elements where there is an uptake, and then I think that something that we'd need to be looking at is if it does uptake it, then is there some toxins in that? You know, I have a canic ceiling in my house, and so I'm told, well, so that means you've got arsenic in your ceiling. So like how do we work with that? But like if hemp can be reutilized, to me I see economic opportunity in all of this. And so the bioremediation of the land, we can look at that as incredibly expensive, or we can look at it as an economic opportunity. And I think as we rehabilitate land, the value of the land goes up for many different levels, whether people are simply buying it to live on it, buying it to grow plants on it. We can be finding a way to interpret this as an opportunity, and it's one that I would really like to see us be exploring. And this is Felicia on Kauai Soapbox, and we are at KCC Kauai Community College with a great group of people discussing how we're going to make our soil better. And following this, there's going to be a great film here by Neil Kinsey's. It's Hands-On Agronomy. We are lucky to have a room full of people who are smart. Many people I'm looking at here I know are already working their land. Do I have any questions from the audience? You can ask any particular person? Do I have a show of hands? Anybody have a question? Okay, I have two people here. Okay, all right. So, Dana? And you can say your name, too.
Okay, my name is Colin Dana.
Sorry, put that backwards. Okay, Colin Dana.
Yeah, I get that a lot. I've been working in Lawai, and well, first of all, I just want to touch on the hemp aspect in terms of what it uptakes. I don't know specifically, but I do know that it does uptake heavy metals. China has been using it on heavily contaminated land where they have been, as was referenced before, burning the hemp and then smelting the ash to actually recover those metals. I don't think heavy metal contamination is a huge issue here on the island, but anyway, I'll just offer that. I had a question, and anyone can jump on this, but Sun was talking about if you have plastic, that's a problem. As a farmer, I can get obsessed with removing plastic. I think anyone here who works the land, especially if you've purchased commercial compost, knows how pervasive small shreds of plastic are, and it's maddening because you're trying to create, you know, this beautiful organic setting, and there's just shreds of plastic everywhere. So I'm always wondering, to what degree is that a problem? Are they off-gassing things? I know the longer that I leave it there, the smaller the particles are going to get, so they're going to be harder to remove. So that always kind of has me, you know, trying to get rid of it when I see it. But, you know, I could spend days doing it and not, you know, get anything else done. So when you talk about the plastic as a problem, is it specifically the plastic, or is it contaminated if it's an agricultural type plastic?
Indication of pineapple land, for one. So that would be the POPs, the persistent organic, what are they? Louder. Not used to speaking louder in the garden. We don't have to. The plants don't care. It's indication of pineapple, DDT. So therefore, when we put Halfa together, basically it was a residue test. And then we could show you what you could grow in that soil. So up in Kapahi, at Black Plastic, we pulled out reams of plastic, and the DDT levels were like 15 parts per million. So therefore, we didn't grow the root crops that were going to pull that up. So my concern is that organic food that, at the Antioch Labs, and we sent beets out from Molawa, and they come back with DDT. Now what do you do? So after a few years, and again, there are no silver bullets, people. I'm sorry, it's going to take time. It's going to take people like you and me to just keep plugging away. And within a short amount of time, if that's an indicator. So you're going to start putting inoculants in. When we got out to Molawa and we do a cover crop, we're going to turn it in, and 3 months later, it's not even breaking down. So you don't have the organism, so you really got to lean heavy on your soil inoculants. So whether it's biodynamic or different kinds that are available, just keep using them. And pretty soon those guys will eat up and decrease the bonds in the chemicals, and you will have no residues to deal with. But we still take out the plastic. I don't want our food to be grown with plastic.
Okay, so thank you. So it sounds like the plastic is as much of an indicator of what has been used there, so it's an indicator of the DDT as much as maybe that the plastic itself is problematic. Tech Nickerson, you have a question? Can you hand him the microphone, please? Yes, we will take a top-of-the-hour break very shortly, but right now we have time for one more question.
Thank you.
And comment.
So, thank you, panelists.
Can you speak into the microphone,
yes,
please?
Yes, thank you. My question is...
Into the microphone, please.
We're back. Thank you. Which of the panelists would be interested in seeing freshwater glacial silt brought from Alaska's ancient Oxbow River deposits to restore the minerals to Kauai soils? Which of the panelists?
I'd be interested.
Okay.
Can you tell us more?
Into the microphone.
I suppose it would depend on the embodied energy that it would take to bring those kind of deposits and the impact on the environment from which they came.
That's a good answer. There is a particular section of river that's been identified to be particularly rich in minerals and is very close to the Glen Highway. So it could be taken out by a truck, could be brought here. My first thought was, let's see if we can get the Army Corps of Engineers to do this. They like to dredge, and it's their responsibility to dredge navigable rivers. But I understand this particular river, this Oxbow, is not navigable, so therefore they may balk at that. If there was a way of getting the Army Corps involved, then I would suggest we get involved our U.S. senators to ask them for us and find a way to bring it here. And I was thinking, gee, how are we going to get it on land? We've got a super ferry ramp. That's how. So.
Yeah, this is Paul Massey again. So when we think about the state in which we want our soils to be here on Kauai, it's very much of a human-centric need. We need to grow nutrient-dense foods to feed ourselves. The soils here on Kauai, although in the grand scheme of things, from a continent, if you were to compare them to continental soils, they are quite young, yet from a volcanic soil and island soil, they are considered quite old and highly weathered. Because of that, they've lost a lot of the minerals that they would have started their life in when it was a pure basalt rock. And the native plant communities that evolved on those soils evolved to live on highly weathered, highly demineralized soils. Now we want to grow crops because we want to eat those minerals that aren't there anymore. And so it's not as if we can just return the Kauai soils to their reference state before humans arrive. We actually need to nutrify them in a way that they've never been nutrified before in some cases. In many parts of Kauai, which is the oldest of the Hawaiian Islands, we have the oxisols, which are highly weathered, acidic, and bereft of those kind of nutrients that are needed for good crop growth. So where are those nutrients going to come from? Can we source them from local sources, or do we need to go to Alaska or other far-flung places to bring those nutrients? Well, if we think about the sugarcane industry, the pineapple industry, we sent the minerals away to the world. And so we may actually have to look at the world to return the minerals and even to boost up the minerals to conditions that never existed here in a particular piece of land within sort of, you know, recorded history. But obviously we want to do it as locally based and with as little impact to the world environment as possible.
Thank you, Paul.
No, I have a quick comment to that. Anyway, not particularly an answer, but there's a, I mean, you can buy rock dust here on the island from the quarry, and you can put it on. But we don't have the complex minerals that have evolved on the continent, you know, over millions and millions of years. We've got basalt here, and it's had a few million years to age and create some complexity, but we don't really have the same types of minerals that you can get from someplace like that. Now, it sounds like a lot of work and a lot of effort and a lot of oil involved in getting those tonnage over here, but it's probably going to be a lot better for the soils than what we can get indigenously here, you know, from local sources. I don't know if anybody has an experience with the rock dust that we can get here, if it really does provide the nutrient loading that we need here.
And you're listening to KKCR Hanalei KAQA Kilauea K284-88AL Hale Iva, and we're going to go to our underwriters that help to support this program.
I want to say that this
and
is...
So,
thank you, Felicia, for that. Thank you so much. This is 5 o'clock. This is KKCR Hanalei KAQA
Kilauea, and I want to say Kauai Soapbox Live is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with Caldwell Banker, Anahola Stringed Instruments, Aya's Garden Supply, and Al Pasteur Tacos.
Caldwell Banker, Bali High Realty, and Hanalei, serving Kauai since 1978, providing personalized real estate sales and rental services. Caldwell Banker, Bali High Realty, also supports KKCR and the Kauai Independent Food Bank. More information at balihigh.com or by calling 826-7244.
Anahola Stringed Instruments is proud to support KKCR. Mickey Sussman has been building Island Koa guitars, ukulele, and violins on Kauai since 1972. Time-honored designs and special orders. Prompt and complete restoration, repair, and reforestation. AnaholaStringedInstruments.com or 822-1645.
Aya's Garden, all-natural garden and greenhouse supply. In Kapa'a, down Kukui Street from the Dragon Building. Fertilizers, amendments, soil, seeds, garden and farm organic growing supplies. Open Monday through Saturday. More information at 822-7333 or visit Aya's Garden on Facebook.
Al Pastor Tacos supports KKCR across the street from the craft fair in Kapa'a by the beach. Al Pastor Tacos serves fresh grilled local fish, steak, chicken, and pork tacos, and burritos in the Al Pastor style. Also a garden salad and choices for the kids. Open every day from 11 to 4. Takeout orders welcome. Al Pastor Tacos, authentic Mexican food. 652-6953.
So this is KKCR Honolulu, KQA, Kilauea. We're going to send you back to KCC over there with Felicia doing a live remote today. So here we go. Felicia, take it away.
So this is Felicia with Kauai Soapbox. So John Parzielli, you had a comment that you wanted to follow up on Tech's comment. And then we're going to go over to this person right here.
So we were talking a little bit about remineralization of the soil, and we were talking about the structure of the rock and base strata on the islands being devoid of a lot of minerals. But one thing to remember is that we are out in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, and from my understanding that the seawater that surrounds us is basically has just about every trace element that's out there in a pretty good balance. That's not going to account for probably the total amount of potassium or phosphorus that may be needed for plant growth, but certainly for the trace elements, the sea, both evaporated seawater, sea solids, or even just fish products, and again, coral, for calcium. So we are kind of out here in the middle of nowhere, but the ocean is also a major resource for that.
Thank you. And so you had a question here?
Agriculture in the Midwest, Iowa. Traditional farming has evolved through scientific techniques and made some stunning advances. The Dust Bowl that we all remember, the 30s and 40s, no longer exists. No-till farming is the practice, general practice in commercial agriculture, and there are a lot of farmers experimenting, creating a tapestry of legume cover crops that are planted between corn and soybean cycles, and then they winter over. It's killed by the frost burn. They degrade into the soil, and even just the minor amount of tilling that occurs with the planting. They don't disc and plow anymore. They just literally have these high-tech planters that they cross plant, which is the rows grow this way one year. They plant either cross or in between the rows. In any event, they're getting organic material into the soil. And these are commercial farmers. So I appreciate all the efforts of the of the small backyard farmers and the extreme amount of effort they put into creating organic farming for their own consumption, to get the type of commercial soil reclamation that we'd like to see on Kauai that they're doing in the Midwest. Our Purdue and lots of other universities have some really detailed studies. So I'd love to hear some of the things that you as panelists are aware of scientifically that have been done elsewhere that you think could be slowly but relatively quickly implemented here on Kauai, and is there a desire and an interest in helping the West Side agricultural community integrate these practices as opposed to the demonization that often occurs? Is there a way to actually integrate positive steps forward in commercial agriculture on the West Side? I'd love to hear your comments.
That's a great question. Hector, do you want to try and take a stab at that one first? Because you work typically with commercial farming, so nice and strong into the mic.
So I want to indicate that, yes, while a lot of good ag practices have been adopted in the Midwest, there's also big deficiencies in their production systems, and the major deficiencies are the large-scale monocultures that are planting and the trend towards less and less rotations. In the old days, farmers used to follow rotations such as corn, soybeans, and so on, but because of the commodities market, now it's becoming continuous corn. So basically each plant species hosts a complex of microbes, and the tomatoes has a different complex that corn would have. So when you have a monoculture system, you simplify the microbial activity in the soil, and this makes it very susceptible for it to lose its balance. So while there's techniques that we could incorporate, such as how to minimize cultivation, how to incorporate more residues into the soil, we will have to think how to do it within a more small-scale, diversified production system.
Thank you, Hector. Ray?
Yes, I was just actually reading a report on some of the no-till techniques and some of the issues that they're discovering years later. And I think Hector made up a good point that the constant rotation of single-cropping systems has depleted large areas of that background microbial environment that would allow the crop to be grown in the previous year's residue. And then have the mulching effect and, you know, all the positive benefits of that approach. But we're still not breaking down fast enough because of that lack of background of the balanced microbes that would be in an ordinary crop rotation system. So I think a lot of those techniques can be used here on Kauai. It's really about smaller scale. Our soils and our soil metabolism is different than the seasonality and the depth of the loam and the also the background glaciation that created the best soils on the planet in that situation. So, and as far as, you know, the West Side guys go, I mean, they're doing their operation. So we would love for them to, you know, try to incorporate some of those techniques, and we're happy to help them if we can do that. And cover cropping would be probably the first most basic technique that could be advised.
What I've seen there is that they do use sun hemp is among the things that they cover crop with. There does seem to be pretty evident cover cropping in the biotech fields, at least in the field trips that I've gone on there. We're seeing that as a pretty regular piece, and trying to do no-till methods. So there is, you know, definitely some direction going in that format. And my understanding is that they're really happy to be working with their buffer zones to be trying to create more solutions and keeping everything a little bit more balanced and healthy. Do we have any other questions in the room? Okay, great. I saw you first. So, Roshan, do you have a mic?
Yeah.
Nice and close into it.
Okay. Aloha. This is kind of an inquiry. I got really interested in the remediation last year when Dr. Hoover was here, and he spoke about glyphosate. He spoke about pesticides a little bit, but we didn't speak about herbicides. And my understanding of with the herbicides is that they're mineral chelators. So when we talk about adding minerals back in, and we've got glyphosate in the soil, which isn't broken down, but cycles through and continues to chelate minerals out, I wonder if that's part of our demineralization problem, and I wonder if there's been any work in Hawaii done on the removal of glyphosate from the soils. A little bit of reading I've done indicates that fungus, certain strains of fungus, are being explored for the removal of glyphosate. And I'd like to make an invitation to the industries on the west side, if they want to participate in soil remediation, to work with remediating and maybe finding the solution to removing glyphosate from the soil.
Thank you. And was there a question for a panelist there, or mostly just a commentary? Did anybody...
Whether there's been work in Hawaii done on the removal of glyphosate in particular, because I feel like that's not only a problem here in Hawaii because of the combination of herbicides and pesticides that they've used, which is a whole other story, but the glyphosate was purported as being safe for a very long time, and so it's very widespread in our soils, and it's not getting out of our soils, and it's not getting out of our waters. It's just continuing to circulate through and bind up our minerals So I'm just curious where
Dave,
Hawaii is in that.
Dave from Kauai Environmental.
I've got some information to that. I'm not sure about the chelation aspects of it. I don't have any knowledge about that. But a lot of the demineralization comes from the, continued use for agriculture, for growing crops, which remove it from there, but also the moisture, the rain. So, constant rain leaches out a lot of the minerals out of the soil. Now, I recently read an article about glyphosate removal, that there's bacteria that can be used that will break down all glyphosate out of the soils in a matter of weeks. The normal natural breakdown of glyphosate, the half-life, is about, I've seen anywhere from 50 to 100 days. So after 100 days, half of it is gone. It's broken down by sunlight and weathering and whatnot. And then it takes 10 half-lives to get down to negligible levels to where you have, great bacterial activity in there again. So you're talking about 1,000 days, which is several years, 3 years or so. There are ways of breaking it down quicker than that. That's just some of the information I've got.
I guess what I understood from Dr. Hoover is that it actually doesn't break down like that. That it cycles, which I didn't do my homework to get this all straight, but it cycles into another form, but then it returns as being glyphosate in the soil. Like it doesn't actually break down. When they test for it, it's broken down to a certain point, but then it never actually leaves our soil. And the reading that I'm doing also indicates it really doesn't break down and leave our soil. So that's kind of my...
And where are you reading?
It was based on Dr. Hoover's talk, and then I just started doing research on the Internet and mostly reading papers.
Okay.
I can provide some.
Could I add a comment?
Yes, please.
So,
Dr. Valenzuela.
So glyphosate behaves somewhat like phosphorus, and soils in Hawaii are very unique because they fix phosphorus at extremely high levels. So our recommendations for phosphorus applications are way higher than anywhere in a lot of parts in the world. So what occurs is that our soils can fixate Roundup for many, many years if there's high organic matter clay content, and Roundup may be released next week, a few months later, or even years down the road. And when it gets released, that's when it starts to chelate micronutrients, which could result in disease outbreaks on plants if you're trying to grow a cash crop. And this is part of my angle that sometimes, a lot of times, our science is based on studies from the mainland, and we actually have to conduct those studies to find out what is the impact under our own particular conditions. So we're finding that not only individual chemicals, but chemical combinations might persist longer than what is reported in the literature.
Paul?
Yes, so I wanted to let people know that Dr. Hoover, one of his lectures will be broadcast tomorrow from noon to 1 on In the Garden on the Farm on Kauai Community Radio. So have a listen to that if you would like to hear his research and his angle on glyphosate. But I think that with glyphosate and so many of the environmental toxins that we're talking about that contaminate the soil, we're talking about potential strategies for dealing with what is already there. But one thing that hasn't been spoken to today is it's really important that we stop now. We've already caused so much damage. The first thing we really need to do is stop applying these contaminants to the soil so we can even start to make some headway. And that's where I think that some of the large industrial agricultural operations on the west side get demonized, because it's not just a matter of, oh, a mistake was made in the past, but they're doing their best to correct it. It's that the mistake and the damage continues to be perpetrated on our island on an ongoing basis.
And you're listening to KKCR Hanalei KAQA Kilauea Kauai Soapbox. This is Felicia. Paul Miller, you have a question.
Yes, I have a question for Dave. As a homeowner, if I wanted to test my soil for contaminants, how much would it cost me to test my soil for contaminants? I guess I might want to limit them in some cases. I was just wondering if there is a certain ones I want to look for in particular, or if I should test for a whole range of them.
Well, I guess since this is being broadcast on the radio, we have a policy or a mandate that we can't talk about prices a whole lot, you know, but I can just kind of throw out some factors that are going to affect the price of that. You know, that one is the number of samples. If you break it down to you have a certain number of fields that need to be tested, if you can break it down, okay, this is the field I want to use for these crops, this is another field for those crops, this is where I want to put my animals. How many uses do you have? Is it all one use? You can take a single sample and describe them all that way. But if you break it down, you're going to increase the number of samples that you need. But I would recommend, you know, same approach we did over at Felicia's house is to run the pesticide scan and then the heavy metals. And then, so that kind of limits it. I mean, there's a thousand other chemicals you could test for, but those are probably the most important in terms of the impact to agriculture and to the, human health, you know, the exposures, that sort of thing. And if you hang around afterwards, I can kind of throw out some numbers more specifically for you.
All right, and I should test, let's say, about a quarter acre area, maybe take samples from 8 or 10 different spots and combine them, or?
No, there's a method called multi-increment sampling, and this is something I want to propose for if you're ever doing any sort of pilot test for the effectiveness of bioremediation or phytoremediation, there are very specific methodologies for sampling and for analysis that need to be followed if you want anybody to believe the results. If you just go out and take a scoop of something, and then you go to the health department and say, hey, I got sky-high levels of this and that, and they're going to say, well, we don't agree with the method that you use to collect that. So generally for a quarter acre, I would probably use 50 to 100 subsamples taken randomly or on a grid, and then you know, you can composite them yourself or have the laboratory do a composite. It's a multi-incremental compositing technique that the laboratory would apply because they've got a couple pounds of soil, and all they need is a spoonful for the analysis. So if they just scoop into the bag and pull out a spoonful, you know, who knows how well mixed those soils were. So there's a very rigorous methodology for compositing those soils that needs to be followed if you want to report those results or publish the results of a study or something like that. So I can give you some more information on that a little later if you want.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Do I have any other? Okay. Marshall? Appreciate all the people here listening. We got a lot of folks that want to make a big difference on our island. Yes?
So for anyone on the panel, are pharmaceuticals a concern in Humner?
pharmaceuticals in human manure, or, and it maybe even animal manure, right? So, like, because there's actually quite a bit of pharmaceuticals in livestock, I believe.
Marshall, one of the concerns might be we used some horse manure once, and worms were gone. And so if they're worming, which is usually with the horses, you know, it's got to sit for a while. But we had a concern with the, you know, like a composting toilet. So if somebody's taking tetracycline or some antibiotic or something like that, we ask them to not use it. That's all. Other than that, everything breaks down in there.
How about, John, do you have any comments about livestock over a large area? And, you know, my understanding is it's very, very difficult to not give livestock any kind of antibiotics in the course of their lifetime in the tropics. So they're going to likely have some. But, like, how about animal manure over large areas of land? Is it, my instinct would tell me it's actually good, but, you know, what is your experience?
Well, specifically with cattle, actually, from my understanding and from my own personal experience, is that cattle receive no antibiotics, at least here, you know, here in the tropics. Actually, they're pretty resistant to a lot of the parasites that affect other ruminants, such as goats and such. And in terms, you know, in terms of the remediation of soil, I think that, cattle grazing is actually could be a really positive thing. I think that oftentimes we take some of the, like the worst practices and management practices that are done to animals, and we sort of apply those numbers and that and some of those philosophies across the board. Like, wow, cows are bad, you know, just because. You know, human beings keep them in confined feeding operations, and which is basically a crime against nature. You know, certainly those same animals in a properly managed system based on grass, cows can or cattle can absolutely heal the land, and there's many ways that they do that. I mean, the obviously with their manure, with fertilization. After the fact, you have dung beetles come in from the manure. They actually excavate subsoil, which increases rain permeability into the soil. They and then at the same time, after they excavate, the dung beetles bring the manure down into the soil. So you have like a perfectly designed fertility mechanism in, right there. That's just happening. You don't have to pay for it. In addition to that, it sounds insignificant, but it's really not. Like the cows produce like gallons of saliva, and every single bite they take on the grass, they're depositing enzymes and microorganisms that actually help the grass heal and to rejuvenate the grass. They don't eat all the grass. They step on the grass, so they step it. They knock it down. They're bringing organic matter onto the soil, so they're getting it's adding organic matter to the soil even on top. So basically, when you start worming animals, what happens is that the same chemicals that are decreasing the whatever parasite that's inside the animal. Is now going to affect a lot of those same systems, especially like for instance like dung beetles. So if you have a chemical input there, then you're going to all these wonderful built-in processes that nature provides. Because again, you have grazing land, you have grazing animals. Okay, this is like the fundamentals of permaculture. You model after natural systems. Okay, so grass. And grazing animals, they kind of grew up together for a long time. So there's all these embedded natural processes that, again, could heal the land. Absolutely.
Angela?
Hi. This is Angela Flynn, and I'm pretty new to Kauai soils. I don't know them that well, but I do know phosphorus is a problem, it seems, that I've heard that, and it's actually a global problem, finding phosphorus sources. And kind of on the same topic is... my understanding is urine is a very good source of phosphorus, and that's something that we might want to be looking into as a way of recycling urine as a phosphorus source instead of, you know, basically using that as a waste product. But probably, you know, the key thing with anything, just back to the cattle, is overpopulation of any animal on the land, including humans, is always a little bit of a problem. And so as long as things are kept to a good population. But anyway, I was just wondering if anyone had any insight into phosphorus and the problems we're having with really a global shortage of phosphorus.
Like Hector mentioned about the soils, they're high iron, and especially the oxisols, right? And so they tie up the phosphorus immediately, and it becomes iron phosphate. So if you see your black iron tools, that's what it is. And we got fish here. And as some others have mentioned, for many years, over 20 years, we've been using the basalt rock dust and the coral sand and the ocean water, seaweed, fish. So you got, if you know the crop that you're going to grow, you can dial in the exact amount of phosphorus and make it available. And that's where the compost comes in too.
So thank you, Sun and Hector. Valenzuela, you have some feedback on that?
So as we envision what kind of cropping systems we would like to have in Kauai, I think you can design a system to try to maximize the extraction of phosphorus that is already available. There are some plants or cover crops that are more efficient and taking out that phosphorus, such as some cowpea varieties or buckwheat. But I think that we should also try to incorporate animal production into our farming systems, because what you're trying to do is, one, you have a base of nutrients to maximize the cycling of those nutrients within the system. And unfortunately, this goes a little bit against the paradigm pushed by big ag that animals are not good for because of food safety and so on. But I think that's a vision for agriculture in terms of incorporating animal and cropping systems.
And you're listening to KKCR Honolulu, KAQA, Kilauea, K284AL. This is Felicia, Kauai Soapbox. We are at Kauai Community College, and we have a group here on soil remediation and how do we strengthen our soils on Kauai. And, I think when we're looking at the biological cycle, animals and plants are meant to go together. And so that is an interesting aspect of the Food Safety Modernization Act that really tries to separate those. It's very confusing to me. There's a lot of really interesting pieces that are taught by the Department of Agriculture in terms of how to not get pathogens spread. That's a very important element. But I know in my small area, having animals and plants basically in the same zone is the biggest piece of success that I have. Jimmy, do you have a question?
I do. Two. First is what are some, I like to sheet mulch, usually use cardboard, quite a bit of that, but I've used carpeting and I've used roofing metal, and then I started realizing maybe that's not the best stuff that I want to be using for weed suppression. What are some of the things that we can use, and what are some of the things that would be best to avoid in regards to when it breaks down, it's not going to be good for my soils? And then the second one was adding to my soil, and Ray, maybe this is more directed to you, IMOs, indigenous microorganisms, and the whole natural farming method. Can you talk a little bit about that as well?
Yes, carpet would probably be the first thing I would not apply as mulch to the soil. Definitely breaks down very fast. I've seen carpet used, and it's a disaster. So The cheapest, easiest thing that I've been able to use in my own systems has been cardboard, and it's very effective for suppressing weeds and retaining moisture in the soil and breaking down. And I watch earthworms crawl through this cardboard, and so as an indicator species, I think earthworm is a pretty delicate indicator of background contamination that is not present in the cardboard. Of course, every other chipped material other than oleander and eucalyptus, I would recommend that we use as the beginnings of our mulching or composting process. As far as the indigenous microorganisms that you alluded to, that is a powdered and a liquid input that I've used under cardboard and watched just the aerobic layer under cardboard increase 3 inches a season for the last year in my garden. You know, at a certain point, obviously, that's going to, come to some standard place where, you know, the aerobic layer and the anaerobic layer in the soil balances itself out. But the tilting, the increase in soil tilt and moisture penetration and earthworms coming up to the surface under cardboard in even a dry area like Moa has been an amazing thing to watch.
Thank you. Panelists, do you have any questions for each other? Is there anything that you would like to be asking of each other? Looks like, okay, Hector?
So, yeah, I'm a little mystified, and I think we all try to find easy solutions or the magic bullet that is going to solve.
For this instant gratification girl, for sure.
Right, right. And my feeling is that it there's no easy answers, that it's just actually getting down and doing the hard work. So I would like to ask Son if he has any suggestions. I know he's been doing it for many, many years on a small scale. So what is your perspective in terms of getting it from the bottom up?
Laulima. Many hands. So what if? So the methodology, the biointensive basically is labor intensive to start. And then we have the remediation and remineralization. So there are no simple solutions. So it's just do it. We have the basalt rock here, and we got, like I said, the ocean water, and we've been doing it for a long time, and we all got to dig in and just, you know, do our part. There's no silver bullets, so it's going to take time, and sorry, Felicia, but all of us here are just be a good farmer, you know, and keep up with the bees and all the rest of it, so that's our buddies, and we have a system that supports that, and the bees are all around. And when they're coming in, you know you're doing something worthwhile. But I'm glad you're here, Hector. We need to work together, and that's kind of been the struggle, basically, is because organic was so new, and most of us, we didn't grow up as farmers, so we're learning. And we had to get into especially out here. This isn't Iowa, so it's a whole different world here. But yet, we can do it even faster here because there's no winter to deal with. So the remediation can be a lot faster. But we're going to need the price of land. You know, you ask about farming here, price of land here, and you're going to grow what? You know, to be successful, to make money, to stay in business. It's uphill for farmers as it is, and organic farmers even more so. So we're writing a book. Look forward to your participation.
And Ray, did you have something you wanted to share?
Yeah, I think, just as a starting point here on Kauai would be identifying what our most important and productive soils are, and also identifying what our strategic inventory of material inputs that can be produced here on island and in the islands, and preserving that. And the first one that comes to my mind is crushed coral. We're fortunate enough to have a little bit of crushed coral that is being spread out on driveways all over the island. And, I think we need to recognize that calcium in that form is a long-term strategic asset for us that, you know, we might have to dig up some of those driveways one day to apply to our yard. And seawater, I think, is a crucial input for the trace minerals that we need to look at and replenish on the soil. And and then what Sun said is, you know, we're sort of writing the book again on the art and the science of organic systems and organic production methodologies in the subtropics. And we can take a lot of the lessons that we've learned on the mainland and apply them here, but there's a lot of work that needs to be done still on, gathering the brain drain that we watched occur in Hawaii over the last 50 years from large-scale agronomic systems where people really understood how to manage large water delivery systems. Also, our dams and our reservoirs need to be maintained, not just for future agricultural use, but for groundwater replenishment and just general ecosystem health. These are all things that we can all work on together, and just replenishing the soil is only one part of it.
I'm curious in our audience here, how many of you at the show of hands are in some process of bioremediating your own land? I would say that's a little bit more than half the room. Those of you who did not raise your hand, is it something that when you're listening to this here, does it seem like an overwhelming task, raise a hand, or does it seem like a doable? How many are saying doable? Okay, I'm seeing some doable. Is anybody feeling overwhelmed by what we're hearing? I have no hands coming up on the overwhelmed side, so I would say, guys, you're being pretty successful. I do always like to just put my little shtick in there as somebody who doesn't like to work hard. If I'm just honest, I just don't like to pick up a shovel very aggressively. And it is, at least at the small scale level, very doable. We haven't had any discussion yet on daikon radishes. Like daikon, Ray, you know something about daikon. And then I'm looking at the end of the table here between Hector and Ray. Like, what are our best plants for pulling this stuff up? To getting the things out of the soil pretty quickly of those things.
Well, as Hector mentioned, there's good things to be brought up out of the soil, and phosphorus would be one of them. Buckwheat is a great bioaccumulator of phosphorus. It'll provide us with a cover crop function, and then a valuable seed, and also valuable biomass that could be utilized by the crop, the next cropping cycle. And then daikon and all the root crops are known bioaccumulators of positive and negative chemical constituents. So one study that has been done here on Kauai was done by our friend Marie Mogé in a biodynamic system. This was a study that was, I think, funded by SARE. And about 10 years ago, where a series of daikon crops were grown on Moloa soils, which have acceptable, quote-unquote, backgrounds of DDT and chlorinated hydrocarbon contamination, and 10% reduction was noticed in, I think, even one cropping cycle on that soil. So that would, you know, obviously imply that that material would have to be brought somewhere else, removed from the system. But then that
where
doesn't
do you
mean,
put it?
Well, where do you put it? I would probably, myself, I couldn't throw it away. I'd have to put it underneath a tree crop of some sort. So, you know, there's different stages of where the materials that were used to remove chemicals from the soil will have to themselves be taken to be healed and then further utilized somewhere else in the biological cycle. So, you know, tree cropping would be probably the first place I'd try to remediate that material.
Okay, that's a good idea, because then, like, we're not just dumping it in Kekaha. Like, when they did clean up the poisons problems in Kilauea, I felt pretty bad because they dug it up and then threw it away in Kekaha. So I was like, well, I'm glad to have it out of my neighborhood, but now it's in theirs. Paul, I see that you've done a little bit of research right here, and also maybe you can speak to sunflowers, too. I've heard sunflowers are good.
Sure. So I'm referring to a EPA fact sheet on phyto remediation strategies, and it does speak to a class of ferns that are referred to as hyperaccumulating ferns, Pteris vittata, and Pitogramma calamelanos. And they can accumulate over 2% arsenic in their biomass. So as we know, arsenic is perhaps the most troubling heavy metal contaminant in Kauai soils, and is thought to be the most persistent contaminant in a field setting from industrial agriculture from the past, not taking into consideration any of the new toxins that are being utilized by the biotech companies at this time. But from historical pineapple and sugar cane, it seems that the arsenic that was used to as both an herbicide and a pesticide is what is persistent in the soil in the field, not considering those places where pesticides were mixed, which have a much greater quantity of different kinds of chemicals that are concerning. But if we could be working with these ferns, we know ferns love to grow on Kauai, and if we can use some of these hyperaccumulating ferns to take up the arsenic so that it can be disposed of, that sounds like a really good partner for us. And I don't really know, I can't give you any information about sunflowers.
Okay, thank you. Colin?
Yeah, this is a quick question for Dave Giroux. When you were talking about background levels of arsenic, do you know at what date they did that test, and were they careful to try to select areas that had not had industrial agriculture? How reliable are these numbers in terms of this is natural?
Well, the particular study I referred to earlier went all over the state. It was within the last 10 years, and it was done fairly recently. This is dated 2011. I don't know exactly when the samples were all taken, so it's a pretty recent study. And I would assume that a lot of them were in agricultural areas. They tried to get a lot of different soil types and geographical areas, and so there's probably going to be a mix of agricultural versus other uses. But one of the things about arsenic, though, that is interesting, I think, is there's another test that you can run. You look at total arsenic in there. You digest it in heavy acids, and you pull out every bit of arsenic you can find in there. But then there's also a test for bioavailable arsenic, which is what the body would absorb after it's ingested. So if you eat a plant that has some of this arsenic in it, how much of that arsenic is actually absorbed into the body, is bioavailable? And the ratio is very low. And so even though we have some of the highest arsenic soils in the country, including North America, most of the arsenic is not bioavailable. And so it because you generally, if you're eating something that's 300-400 parts per million arsenic, it will kill you. But fortunately, they're in a form that we can't digest. And so that is in our favor anyway.
Is that semi-permanent, or are there factors which could cause that arsenic to become bioavailable?
I'm not all that familiar with the arsenic chemistry, but I would assume perhaps some of it might over time as it broke down. But for the most part, and this is the test that I have to run periodically, because when you get arsenic levels over a certain amount, then the next question is, well, is it bioavailable? And so that, whenever you're talking to the health department about it, that'll, you say, I got high arsenic levels, is it bioavailable? There's a specific test you have to request for that. And I've never had anything fail come over the environment, or what's called the environmental action level, the state environmental action level on bioavailable arsenic. So that's a good thing, I guess, about that. You know.
And Dave, when you're looking at the background of Kauai, you also go a lot around the different islands in this chain, all the way up to Midway, and you go further out into the Pacific. I mean, and in your earlier career, how do you compare the toxicity of Kauai soils with, you know, much of the other islands or other places that you've had experience?
Well, most of my experience is trying to determine if there's been a release, a spill or something, if something has been impacted from illegal activities because they fall under the regulations. If something is there naturally, nobody really seems to care about that except the farmers, you know. And so that's why we're having this discussion here. But, you know, in my job, I'm there to try and identify if there's been some release, a spill or something. Like, for example, in Kilauea, where we had that pesticide mixing building there, and all the material was just spilled out of the back. So that was an illegal activity that had to be cleaned up by the regulations. If you found the same concentrations in your yard and it was from a natural source, the health department would just shrug their shoulders and not be concerned whatsoever. So it's kind of inconsistent, I guess, to some extent.
So this is a little facetious, but is big ag considered a natural source? I mean, is there any recourse for people who have contaminated land and it's not their fault? I mean, obviously someone did this. Is it like, okay, statute of limitations? We're not, I mean, obviously the big money, you know, you'd have to have a pretty watertight case, I guess, to get a dime out of them. But is there any protections for the common people?
One thing is that the EPA thinks about, if these pesticides are applied in a legal manner, according to the instructions on the label, you know, the loading quantity, how much you're allowed to spray on it, if it's done legally, according to pesticide regulations, then whatever residues persist in the soils are of no concern to them from a regulatory standpoint. And so, if they accidentally spilled it or applied it too heavily or something like that, then it could be an illegal activity that they might get involved with. But if they say if there's residues in the soil from perfectly legal application of pesticides, it's of no concern to them whatsoever.
And you're listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, Kauai Soapbox, and then coming up at the top of the hour is Pete's Jazz Lounge. Do we have another question right over here in this area?
When you say the legal application of pesticides, I think here in Kauai, one of our questions has to do with the application of chemicals on the west side and that they're being applied in much higher frequencies than they would ever be used in a regular kind of growing situation. Is that legal? They're being used in combinations that they were never intended to be used in, so we've got chemical combinations that we don't have studies for. Is that legal? And so there might be, I've wondered if there wouldn't be a way to bring in responsibility with industry to clean up after themselves.
Hector, would you be the most appropriate to be able to answer that, or would that be more Dave?
I think I gave my answer to that.
Okay. Do you know?
No. I think it's just a part of a social responsibility in terms of what you're doing. If what you're doing is causing external cost to society, then that you should be expected to pay or to fix the problem. But I don't think that's set up in today's...
Right, that's an ethical but not a legal element. John, are you wanting to comment?
Well, I do know that there is some historical perspective, and I believe the Superfund sites, as the federal government taxes polluters, and then it goes into a big kitty. And then when there's these really toxic places that are just beyond belief, that they use the Superfund money to clean up the waste. So there is some historical precedent for that. So, you know, maybe there's a way that we can, you know, I think Sun made a really good point earlier on about the remediation of large tracts of land is like, who's going to pay for this? It seems only natural. Maybe the people that polluted it could participate at least in some level.
I just wanted to add that in the past, one of the few ways that this has worked out or sorted out, that has been sorted out, is just through the court system. When there has been shown that there has been damage to communities or to the health of workers or so on, that's one has been one of the solutions in terms of make these companies responsible for what they did.
Felicia, I'm wondering if you can tell us a bit about your assistance in an effort to get funding to clean up a dump site on the west side.
Well, you never want to count your eggs before they're hatched. There is a grant that is under application that, without mentioning who those people are yet, is a West Side site, and we certainly do want to put a big piece of that grant money being asked for towards experimenting with bioremediation, and we're hoping actually to utilize a handful of the people sitting right here at this table to be, first of all, testing to see what's in there, and then working, you know, as aggressively as possible to be finding something close to a silver bullet. I'm just going to sit there and hold out that somehow we can, clean this land up. And, you know, yes, it does take years, but, you know, hopefully that you can get 50% of the problem taken care of in a certain amount of time, you know, and then it becomes more and more diminishing. And then the more you can layer on top is what I would be hoping also, that, you know, if you get a lot of good topsoil on top of it, that you can be not growing into that damaged area. I know in my own yard, though, I pretty much don't grow things like daikons and beets and kale and cilantro and all those things that I did grow but then saw in the uptake samples. And I do want to give a shout-out to CTAR because they were very good at helping to do the uptake samples. And it was interesting to see lead in the eggs, too. So, and then you can get your hair tested and, you know, see the other end of it. And, of course, you know, maybe that could have happened from, you know, way young. But I think that the more that we can start doing this and just changing our awareness of how we handle the land, that we can start to at least be getting rid of the dust, the toxic dust. And, I hold out that we can really make quite a bit of difference. Do I have another question over here? Yes.
For anyone on the panel, is anyone familiar with Biozome and whether or not it has really good remedial effects on the soil? And then since you brought up the vegetable thing, uptaking heavy metals or pesticides, I was wondering if there's a way of accessing that information, which vegetables uptake what chemicals or pesticides or metals.
I want to answer a little piece of that. Roy Yamakawa from UHCTAR was one of our panelists that was invited. He had something else, so he couldn't make it, but he is a wealth of information. He knows a ton of information, and so that's in the state building right down there in Lihue. So just bring your stuff there and show them and just ask. I have found the CTAR folks are incredibly helpful, really, really willing to give you information. You know, and at some level, living is fatal, right? I mean, you know, there's going to be something, you know, right? So.
The Biozome is very effective. It's a fabulous focus. It's one of the first things that we use in the compost, on the soil.
Can you say what it is, Biozome?
It's
is it?
Basically, it's a powder. It's an inoculant. How's that better? It was collected all around the world. I think it took the guy like 40 years. You can research that. And all these microorganisms that are pioneers and at breaking down. Again, we've shown the DDT residues just using compost. And Paul, you see how we do it, so it works. So anything going through that compost, one of the other things that could happen was in the phytoremediation is once these plants, I'm not sure about the heavy metals, but we've seen the DDT basically disappears in the compost. So whatever happens, it's a miracle. So stick with that. We have it all here, and I guess the piece I want to add is the not just the quality of the food, but to look at our intake of what we eat too, because with all this scare stuff, I think the tension is being, how's that better? The tension is being created, I think, is unnecessary. So we have lots of probiotic foods that we can be eating that chelate elements and heavy metals in the body. So really we have solutions here is the message I'm going to leave you all with. So.
Okay, and thank you, Sun, for that last message. And we just have 5 minutes left, so it gives each one of you men 1 minute to say your aloha from Paul, John, Dave, Ray, and Hector. What's your last thought you want to leave the listener with this show?
Every day is Earth Day. Thanks so much to KCC, Kauai Community College, for hosting us today. And please consider coming down and seeing the film this evening starting at 6:30. Grateful for the rest of the panelists, and I would just ask that each one of you would consider working together with us at Regenerations to develop the simplest, easiest grassroots methods where we can empower all the citizens of Kauai to be healing the soils and bringing greater health and well-being to this island.
Wow. So I definitely wanted to extend a big mahalo to Regenerations as well and KKCR for putting something like this together. We should be having more of these conversations on all kinds of different topics. But with this, you know, the soil question and the remediation question, it's going to take the whole village on this one. It's going to, you know, we need federal funding, we need state funding, we need county money, we need private foundation money, we need tons of volunteers. And if we come together like that, we can make these beautiful things happen. So, thank you.
Thank you, Dave.
You know, I think it sounds like everybody here in the audience and a lot of people listening, they're all involved in their own soil remediation projects at one level or another. But what I would like to see happen is a big concerted effort island-wide. We got 100,000 acres of cane land that's just sitting fallow, is running off every time it rains, and all those contaminants on there that need to be dealt with. And, you know, it's a big job, but, you know, hopefully we can get started on it and finish it up one day.
Thank you. Ray?
Yeah, I'd like to just echo what Dave said. You know, we have the technologies to do this. They're the old technologies with a new twist to them and all the benefits of the modern tools that we have. The network is being built and, you know, a good indication of the expertise and the willingness and the interest is in the room here today and listening to the radio. It is Earth Day. This is the future holiday that unites the whole planet and crosses all national, ethnic, religious boundaries. It's the one event and time where we all get together and celebrate the Earth and the future of life on the planet. And, you know, there is no silver bullet, but we've got a couple of them in our pockets here. And we want to share that with everyone here on Kauai and beyond. Hector?
So the question mark is removal of toxins from the soil, but also enhancing microbial activity to degrade those chemicals. But I also have a question mark as to the many complex of different cocktails of chemicals that are in the soil in terms of how to work them out. But I think it's, again, the community approach, and people come first. Thank you.
Thank you, everybody. And thank you, Hector, for having some interest in coming over to Kauai and to help us. And, you know, there's, as I look around the room, and a couple have left, but there's a number of people who have the talent to be doing this. It's not just this panel. There's many people here. We are a long way in the right direction, and I think that there's a very willing heart. So I'm really excited to see what comes up, and hopefully between now and the next Earth Day, we're going to have at least this one project out on the west side that's a lot healthier than it is today. And I'm very excited about that. So thank you for listening to Kauai Soapbox with our soil remediation story here at Kauai Community College. And so this has been Felicia, Kauai Soapbox, KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea. And they're going to take it away at the station. Like mahalo. Ahui ho.
I'm